Hey, I'm Johnny. I'm an alcoholic. Man, I wish some of that weren't true, but it is. It wasn't eyeliner, man. I was just worn out. You know, anybody get the dark ring? It had been a long, I don't know, 15 years. Let me think a minute. I'm supposed to tell you a story. And what I was thinking on the way over here, I actually make notes because I'm a long-winded fucker, and I try to keep this stuff a little bit condensed so that I don't start talking about weird stuff that has nothing to do with why we're here. That's likely to happen. By the way, does anybody want to talk about data science? It's a new thing. Never mind. So my whole life, I'm not going to drag you through my whole life. Just, I was born in Groves, Texas, and raised in Louisiana. And I was raised Mormon, and I was very different than other kids for obvious reasons. And I thought that there was something wrong with me because of that. Maybe there is, I don't know. And then I was molested when I was 4 by my uncle. I thought maybe there was something wrong with me because of that, and maybe there is. And you know, I never met my biological father, so I was unwanted, so I figured there's probably something wrong with me. Maybe there is. Probably is. If you ask my wife, she'll give you a list. And then my mother got remarried when I was 11 to a very, very dry alcoholic. And he was abusive, wasn't a really good guy, did not fit the picture of what I thought it meant to have a dad in the house. And I thought there was something wrong with me. But even if all of those things weren't going on, there was always this low-level hum of disaster just waiting to happen. It's always been that way. Anybody like Westerns? I like Clint Eastwood Freak. Okay, thank you. You may be the only person that gets this. I was Mormon and nobody drank, and so I didn't know anything about drinking except what Clint Eastwood did. And he would waltz into the bar, tough as nails, and real cool, like you'd say, whiskey. And he'd make the face, right? All right, some of you have seen it. You didn't raise your hand, but you know exactly what I'm talking about. And he'd drink it, and he'd make that kind of face. And he was just tough as hell, right? And then he'd go out and shoot everybody in town. And I thought, what is he drinking? I was a kid, and I was like, I got to get some of that. I connected it with him being... Oh, there's kids in here. Billy Joe, really tough. And I was at a football game. I wasn't particularly a football fan, but, well, there were girls there. And I wanted whiskey, so I asked my uncle if he'd pick me up some. Again, the Mormon problem. If you're Mormon, I don't mean to offend you. It's just part of this weird story. But he was what they call a Jack Mormon, right? So he was raised in it. He didn't do any of it. Okay, we got a Jack Mormon in the house. And so he said, well, yeah, how much you want? I said, you know, like a bottle. He said, well, you want a fifth or a pint? I'm trying to do the math, like, really quick so I look like I'm not going to screw this up. And I knew that a pint was like this, right? Milk. Milk comes in a pint. I figured a fifth, well, that can't do any harm. I'll do a fifth. A fifth will be good. So he gives me this big bottle of Jim Beam. I'm like, this is some Clint Eastwood shit right here. And I took a slug out of that stuff, man. And it's like I went blind. And it was burning. And there was tears running down my face. And I couldn't breathe. And it burned all the way down. And then it hit my stomach. And I thought I was going to die. I'm like, this stuff is poison. And I immediately wanted more. I felt right. And it was fast. I don't know how it worked that fast, but I felt like Clint Eastwood. I felt solid. I didn't have any guns or cool outfit or anything. That came later. By the way, don't dress up like Clint Eastwood. It's not really the look that the girls are looking for. It's a different kind of look. But I would ask myself all the time, like, why? Why me? Why this? Why that? Why do I have to have this going on? Why does everybody at school look at me weird except that I had a pink mohawk that stood up like this in Louisiana, by the way, in Monroe. And if you have any idea, it is country with a K. They don't even know about the letter C. It's that kind of country. And I was concerned because I didn't fit in. But I didn't get it. I didn't get anybody. I didn't imagine myself to be different. I was different. And I bring that up because there are things that happen in our lives that we were a victim to. And that's just a fact. We hear a lot of times, well, you know, I'm not a victim and not this and not that. Well, maybe we are. The question I'm learning to ask today isn't why, it's how. How do I show up like a man of faith, a man of God, despite these things? Now, I didn't have that answer for a really, really long time. I tried to fix myself with girls, the ones that would talk to me. And I really had to look for them. They were usually out of town, and that's the truth. So I found one. She kept talking to me, so we slept together. And then we had a kid, and it seemed like, well, we'll get married, and then I'll be, then everything will just kind of straighten out. It'll all be good. And so we did. And I'm starting to see a connection with film I've never noticed in my life. I was watching Rambo, and I needed a job. And I guess there's also a fascination with firearms. That'll also come later. But he had a big one, and everybody was scared of him. He had a great big knife, and I thought, I should join the Army. Then everything will kind of level out. Because, I mean, I was 17. I was going to be 18, and there's a baby on the way, and there's all this stuff, and I'm trying to grow up. I really am. But my God, every time I'd feel a little uneasy, I just wanted to drink, man. I didn't drink all the time, not for a while. Eventually I would, because it kept me right. And look, I mean, you know, alcohol isn't my problem, and I know that today. I didn't know that for a long time because it worked so well, right? It worked great. It did make me whole. I didn't imagine it. It quieted all of that noise. Eventually, all the noise would continue, and I was drunk. And then I really did have guns involved in my life. So anyway, I'm in the Army, and I'm a little unbalanced. And they sent me to the shrink, and they said, this is not the kind of guy we want to handle explosives. And so they asked me to go find another job that wasn't in the Army. So I got an uncharacterized discharge. And what that means is I don't claim them, they don't claim me. It sounds like every date I've ever been on, right? Like, just don't tell them, I'm not going to say anything, you don't say anything. Just pretend like shit didn't happen. I never could show up for that little girl. And I couldn't show up really for anybody. And I really felt like the entire world was against me. Like somehow I was like branded, a branded man, as the song goes, you know, no matter what I do, it's me and Merle Haggard, and we're the only ones that know that I'm a branded man. And so I kept making these little attempts to try to get back in her life, try to show up and act like a dad. I have no idea what that looks like. And I'd try to have a job, and then they kept wanting me to come all the time, wake up at a certain time and carry stuff and put stuff down. And I couldn't do that either. And I drank my way all down to New Orleans. I finally dropped out of high school. It was in the way. In New Orleans, I felt right because there was nothing unusual about my drinking there. If you've ever been, there are many drinking types, and they like to drink all the damn time, and I like to drink all the damn time. And so I would go in and out of these bars at any time of day and night, and it worked great. And then I couldn't even maintain that. And it seems like there's always a stripper. There was a stripper, and she introduced me to coke. And if drugs aren't a part of your story, that would be a little weird. But I understand that some people don't, you know, singleness of purpose and stuff like that. But anyway, it's part of mine because it became this chemistry set. And then the blow, and then the wow, meth. Boy, that was strong. And then we were joking earlier because then, I mean, there's all this going on, and well, that's exciting. But then I had to have, I wasn't sleeping very well. And so I'd have to have different medications for that. Valium worked, and then heroin will really help you sleep, and then awake, and then sleeping and awake. But all these things I tried to manage, and then I thought, well, if I move to Austin, Texas, I can go get in a band, and I played in some bands in Louisiana. Nobody's heard of them, and we didn't even have venues. It's like in a field, a sugarcane field, you know, and it's you can't really do punk on acoustic. It's not cool. Anyway, and then a washboard. So I moved to Austin, and by this time I'd cut out everybody in my life. I mean, there's nobody there, and I was fine with that. I felt like I was saving them some trouble. They didn't have to see, you know, what was going on, and I was carrying the weight of the world, right? You know, such a victim. Why me? Why, you know, why this, why that? And you don't understand, and, you know, they never do. And I somehow expected them to understand the mind of an alcoholic, and you guys are the only ones that get it. I didn't know that till later either. So, good. List done. Over. Oh, it's blank shit. All right. Well, when I got here, I met this great gal that he was talking about. We seemed to hit it off, it seemed, because she kept talking to me, and so we slept together. And I know, it's a sad state, and her husband didn't like it, and, you know. He cornered me in a bar one night, and he said, you know, Amy's married. I said, yeah. To me. I'm like, yeah. Well, I heard you're trying to make time with her. I said, yeah, what is your point? And I said, buddy, if I ever see you again, I'm going to break both your fucking legs. I'm going to shove them in your ass. That's what I'm going to do. And he knew I meant it. Because by that time, I didn't care about anybody anymore. There was two things that I did learn growing up. And that is, when I started having a hard time in school, my grandfather, real Scottish-American pride, right? The Scots drink and they fight. And we didn't drink, but they still fought. And so he taught me how to fight dirty. And I'm not proud of that. There's not a tough bone in my body. I would run today screaming. Because that's just not how I want to live my life, right? But then it seemed like a solution. And this guy was scared. And I felt like Clint Eastwood. And I felt like Rambo. I wasn't wearing either one of those costumes, but I was winning. And I never saw that guy. And he avoided me. He was the first amends I managed to make. But I shouldn't start there. But things, as you might imagine, didn't go very well with the girl. And she went to Houston for a week. And forgive me, all this is really blurry even still because it wasn't happening upstairs in my head very well. And she came back with a desire chip. And I'd been through a couple of treatment centers, and I knew that they tell you to get rid of the playmates and the play set. I don't know. They tell you to get rid of people. And I knew that I was on my way out. And so I explained that I knew what AA was about. And if she wanted to go, you know, and hear all these depressing stories about people who lost their leg, sitting around talking about how they lost their leg all their life, I'll be glad to go with you. I'll show you what this stuff is like. You'll see what a ridiculous idea this is. And so I went. And you know, it's funny, man. There's this guy named Mark. And Mark is like this, he's real wiry fellow, and he's from Big Springs, and he talks like this, but he's scary at the same time. You know, he's got the crazy eye look, like you don't look this dude in the face. And he says, when the almighty power in the universe wants you to listen, you will. And he's right. Any of you here, like a moment of clarity, just for that 1 second? Me too. And somebody in a meeting said something, and I don't know what it was, but somehow it was curious to me because I knew that you guys drank like I did, and a lot of you did dope like I did, but I didn't know that the stuff going on upstairs, that it's like my brain was hot all the time, you know, just hot. And I didn't really think that I should talk about some of the stuff that went in my head. You know, like even tonight, I'm using the restroom. I still count how many people are in there because it's like a weird defense mechanism thing. I've been to jail multiple times, and I didn't like that either, by the way. Room service sucks. You don't get a key. It's not the Best Western. So I heard something this guy said, and it was curious, and I didn't know exactly what it meant. And so I was driving around with I had a bag of a blow in the car, and so I think my last drink was so unimpressive. It was like a half bottle of Mad Dog and some Lone Star. So I went, come on, man, Lone Star, really? It's, you know, yeah, I like a stout, but I couldn't afford that stuff. Anyway, so I ditched her that day, and I went to another meeting because I wanted to investigate this stuff for myself. Because whatever that thing was that whoever it was said it, made me think that perhaps at least that one guy knew what I was talking about. And so I went back. And I sat in this meeting. And my social skills were a little out of whack. I grabbed this guy by the shirt after the meeting, and I said, you got to help me. And he became my first sponsor. I realize now it's not an appropriate way to introduce yourself. That wasn't... That I was having a hard time, and he said he would, and we sat down and we talked, and he listened, and we kind of went through what it is to be an alcoholic. You know, there's no hope for somebody like me, none. In the doctor's opinion, you know, the kind of the phenomenon of craving and the just the visceral need for alcohol, it says never occurs in the temperate drinker. Never. They will never understand what that weird thing is that's going on inside me where I absolutely 100% have to have it. And he suggested that if I did the steps, that I would not only stay sober, but that my life would get better, something like that. You know, we all hear it keeps getting better and all that. And I was like, yeah, all right. You know, I just need to stop drinking and doing drugs. And if it gets a little better, that'd be good. And this guy and I got to talking, and he explained that if I could begin to rely on a higher power, that it was going to be key to my whole recovery. And he said it could be whatever conception I want. I said, no. You see, I'm Mormon. And, well, we know things that you don't know. You don't actually get to choose anything. There's a whole book about what I have to believe. And, man, it was a real struggle. I'm not saying anything about the Mormon church. I'm saying that it affected the freedom of really getting to know God. I discovered today that the best teacher about God is God. And so I asked God to teach me about himself. This is an idea that never occurred to me, ever. But it's still a little too early for that. He had me pray this prayer, you know, our third step prayer. It felt weird. It also felt familiar. See, I don't think that I ever doubted the existence of God, but I was cursed in some way. And so I was damned or something. You know, God wasn't involved in my life. You know, there was some kind of problem he had with me, and I didn't know what it was. And all this stuff that happened in my past, you know, and the jail and the treatment centers. And, you know, I got locked up in the nut ward twice, and they don't let you out of there either, not even for good behavior. And that was distressing because I really didn't want to be in there either. And so he had me do a four-step after this. And he said, it's got to be really gritty. We got to really get into all the dark corners. I thought, all right, you know, and I started doing it. Then I called him up and I said, you know, I've been reading about this four step, and well, I'm pretty smart, and it really comes down to who it is, what they did, and what they got coming. I don't really see all the need for all these other parts of the step, and the, you know, let me just tell you about these people. And Chris is right. This guy said, there's kids in here, I got to remember this. He said, do you want to stay sober? I said, yeah. He said, just do the steps the way I tell you to. Don't get creative. And you'd have to know this guy. This guy is not, he didn't talk like that. He's kind of a, you know, he was a real mild-mannered kind of guy, but I think he was tired of hearing me. You know, he told me to call him as often as I needed to, so I called him like on the hour. But I really wanted to stay sober. Like, I knew that if I didn't, all of that stuff that happened in the past is going to repeat, just like it has. So I was 32 years old when I got sober. I'm 46 now. So that was April 7th, 2003. And there was no way I was going to do my inventory with this guy. Because, I mean, he was the only friend I had now. You know, and during this process, I met Chris. Now I got two friends, too. Do any of you guys have friends that you're in contact with that you've had for 15 years? I have never had that in my life. And I have that today. Like lots of them. That is amazing to me. Like we spend holidays together and stuff like that. That didn't come till later because nobody wanted me on their front lawn. But I got to do my fifth step with another guy who I threatened because I thought he was going to go tell somebody, and you know, I needed him to know I will come and break your legs and I'll do things. And this poor guy fell asleep in the middle of my fifth step. I thought it was so amazing. He literally dozed off right there in the middle of my fifth step. I'd been sober for like 80 years, and he's heard it all, and you know, he's real kind and everything, and you know, so I bounced around getting a couple sponsors because I didn't know how to tell this one person all this stuff. I somehow wanted to keep it a secret, and I told 10 people. I don't know. I wasn't too bright then either. And I started to notice these things, and you know, Chris would introduce me to other guys. I thought I'd be the only musician in Austin that was sober. I turned out I'm not really a musician, and there's plenty of them that are sober. And I really, but if you could have seen the rock star in my head, man, you'd know how cool I was. And we started to work through some of this stuff in my past, right? This thing with the uncle and the dad and the Mormon church and all these things that really messed me up because of me. And, you know, you look at stuff like that, and I only bring up this weirdness with my uncle because I know that there are at least 20 of you that share this. And things have happened to us. And seemingly at the end of the fourth step, what's my part? Well, it's hard to say, isn't it? I was five. What's my part? My part is I'm 32 years old, and it's still defining who I am. That's what's putting me on edge, because nobody will ever get the drop on me ever again. That's not really healthy to be carrying around in every single relationship, because I wasn't trustworthy, but I certainly didn't trust you, not a bit. And so everything had to be at arm's length. I still have difficulty with crowds and relationships and stuff like that, except my wife, but she's like me. Incidentally, my wife is my dealer's ex-girlfriend, and I had to work for him as a collector because I was using a lot of drugs, and he was going to cut me off. And I really liked her, but she was dating the dealer, so you don't, you know. And then I found out she was sober, and the rest is history, and I'll tell you that in a minute because it's the most mind-blowing part of my life today. As we continued to work these steps, you know, I had to really look at all the people I'd harmed. I'd done the inventory the way it was lined out. I stopped complaining. I stopped coming up with reasons. I stopped delaying. When he said to have it done in 3 days, I got it done in 3 days because he had the secret. I didn't have the secret, whatever the secret is, right? And so as we continued to go through this, and I had to make these amends, I ran into that guy, you know, whose wife I'd been running around with. And I'd forgotten about the breaking the legs thing. And I saw him in the street, and I said, Les! Again, not really appropriate when you're trying to make contact with another human being. He was as far as from me to you. I was just excited because I wanted to try to write things. Always, 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 always talk to your sponsor before you start making amends. Because here's how it goes wrong. I walk up to the guy, and I said, look, man, I was doing this, this, and this with your wife, and I know that was wrong. And if you want to, you can beat the living snot out of me, and I won't do a thing. I really thought that was an amend. It sounds right in my head, like, right? Because that's the way I operate. You offend me, it's coming. So I thought, well, this is godly. I'll just let him beat the snot out of me. Everything will be right with Jesus, and I can stay sober. And so this guy in the middle of the street, this is Red River, right? Hugs my neck. Who does that? And I didn't know what to do. I mean, this guy is totally offering me forgiveness, and he said, thank you. I thought, I just really didn't know what to do with that. I was waiting, like, oh, surely he's got a knife. I mean, this is like a gag. I mean, I'm not new. I know this word. And he left, and I left, and I wept, and I prayed, and I also called my sponsor, who suggested I don't do ninth steps quite like that. So I learned that there's actually a process in which we make amends. And if you go through the book, there's all kinds of how-tos into how to make amends to employers, to creditors, to family. I didn't read any of that. I started off on the guy in the middle of the street. But that was enough to where I began to experience the power of God in my life. This wasn't about anything about belief. This is about firsthand experience. And I was seeing it. Not because the guy didn't beat me up. I was prepared for that. I deserved it. I was willing. But there was something else going on there that I could not explain, right? Because that was a little weird. Every other amend started to be weird like that. And then I started to do it differently. You know, I was this. I did this. What can I do to make it right? And then shut up and let them talk. And with the exception of the original ex-wife, there was another one too, but after she hit me with a car, I'm like, I don't think we're doing well. And so we split up. My family started to talk to me about their life. This dad that I never got along with. You know, I can't lie and say he's a great guy underneath and all this stuff. He's not. But he's a human. You know, no matter what anybody believes, I'm of the belief that we really are all brothers and sisters on the planet. We're the only creatures like us. And the only thing that separates us from apes is our ability to reason. And he's not any different than I am. You know, we've all got our things. The question isn't why, it's how. How do I show up in this man's life as a man of faith, rather than a man of fear or a man of resentment? And God has revealed that to me because I asked. And, you know, I moved to Memphis for a little bit to try to show up for them. They moved there. My ex-wife and my daughter had also moved there, kind of tried to show up for them. And it didn't go swimmingly well. It did with my parents. It didn't go so great with my daughter. And she didn't speak to me until a week ago. First time in over 10 years. She said, message me on the FaceTubes, because that's what you do. And she wanted to start out by saying, I know it's been a long time, and I just want to explain that I'm a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and part of my journey is to make amends where I've done harm. I'm like, oh, why would I be relieved that she's a drunk? But somehow I was. Like, like, oh, that's what's wrong with you. Well, there's a solution for that. I feel much better. And now we're talking every day. And I met my wife, and that was cool. But before that happened, I didn't have an education, and so I thought I should get one. And I'm not saying these things to brag. I'm trying to hopefully paint a picture that wreck of a man turned into something else. And so I thought I might go to college. Sounds horrible. But it seemed like where you would go so you could get a better job, at least the kind that I wanted. And I was terrified. I didn't think I could do it. And I had to do a couple of algebra things and, you know, some remedial this and that. But I got in there, and I graduated magna cum laude. I was shocked the entire time. At first I thought, well, I'm getting an A because they feel sorry for the old guy in the classroom. This little Russian, I shouldn't tell this, but I'm gonna. This little Russian exchange student came and sat down. Typical. You've seen this in any movie. This little blonde, you know. Sir, do you have the notes from the class? Well, yes, I do. I do have the notes. Would you like to see the notes? Yes, could I get them after class? I'm like, absolutely, you can have. She says, oh, thank you, sir. Like your dad kind of, sir? That's not where it's supposed to go. So one of the discoveries I met being 38 in college was that I was indeed 38 and not 22. I somehow think Shmananka knew that too. And that's a side note. It's just, you know, stupid story. But then I didn't know what else to do, so I decided to go ahead and stay and go to graduate school. And then I got recruited by an ed tech company. And these are words that I didn't speak like 10 years ago, by the way. Ed tech. Who is ed tech? I didn't get it. And I got married, and she had a set of twins, and they're mine now. And then we decided to have a baby. She's mine too. So I've got four kids, and I love them, and they know me. And well, the two-year-old, there's a problem. We went over to my buddy's house for Thanksgiving. She locked herself up in the dog cage, and I'm like, oh, hon, it's way too early for this. It's probably coming, but not right now. And I got a picture of this. It's great. She's just sitting there like, I belong behind bars. I'm like, that's a theme throughout our family. And I've got friends who call me to ask me how I'm doing. I don't know if that's weird to you. Nobody called me to ask me how I was doing. Ever. Nobody wanted to check in to see how the new job is going. Ever. Nobody ever did that. Nobody wanted to be near me. I was a disaster, man. During this whole process and experiencing these little sparks here and there, I began to understand something it says in the big book, and it says where we became conscious of God's presence. Now, this turned something I previously believed on my head, which was like a Santa Claus type thing. If I pray real hard and I really, really mean it, he'll show up. What I understand now is that's not what consciousness means. I looked it up. It turns out God has been here all along. I have just now become aware of his presence. That is extremely powerful to me. And then I discovered that all these things that happened in my past can help save lives. I work with about 10 other guys today, and they trust me with their deepest stuff. And nobody trusted me with anything. And then I call them, and I trust them with my stuff. Oh, no, it's supposed to be a hierarchy. You won't find that in the book. It's the exchange of information. That's a sponsor-sponsee relationship, nothing more. And I gain just as much from them as they claim to have gotten from me, that I get from my sponsor. We just keep passing this stuff out, man, and you watch it just grow right before your face. Friends are popping up. All this stuff that says in the big book is true. We talk about the promises. They're not promises. They're results. This is math. If you do 12 things, you get the result. It's always the same. Like we always say, if you follow the recipe, you get cake. If you leave out the eggs, it ain't cake. It's some other thing. But if you follow the directions, the same results happen. It happens every time. And life has been anything but easy. This has been probably the toughest year in my recovery. Even though everything would seem to be right, things were not quite right. My wife and I were having problems. I became unemployed again. I had a lot of things tied up into being a provider and what I thought that meant because I'm new to all of this. Look, while everybody else was getting life skills, I was drinking and drugging, trying to shut the world out. And so here I am, 46 years old, and I'm just now beginning to move into like adolescence. And so I'm having to learn all these things. I can't do this by myself. I don't do pressure well. But somehow I have been sustained through every single step. And it's, look, if man were marked by the amount of willpower he has, I would be up there. I mean, think about it. We know this isn't about willpower, right? Hopefully you've been here longer than 10 minutes. This isn't about willpower. We have exerted willpower and gotten a lot out of it. I got a lot of what I wanted. Even if I had to choke it out of somebody, I got it. So it's not about willpower either, because I don't have the ability to make these things happen. But I certainly don't have the ability to sustain myself in the midst of chaos. But then there's this peace when I'm through slugging it out where I don't have any evidence whatsoever throughout my entire history of not being taken care of, despite the incidents that have happened. I learned that I could forgive my uncle. I learned that I could forgive my father. I actually mean that. I didn't do it because something changed and I became the apostle and, you know, wanted to pour out my heart, my blood all over the lamb or whatever. You know, but what happened was is that I discovered that a lot of this is choices. It's math. I can actually choose to forgive people in my past and become free. Because it's about getting free. I mean, the ninth step amends, we are making our wrongs right, but it's about getting free. And there is limitless freedom available for anybody who does this stuff. I know it because I've witnessed it and I've experienced it. And so have hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people. This should be obvious by now that this thing works. And there is no doubt in my mind that it will work for you too, if you follow the recipe. Thanks.